With the inception and traction that blockchain and crypto has gathered, the world is possibly on the verge of the largest evolution since the mainstream of the internet. Given the fluidity and dynamic nature of this technology, business leaders, enthusiasts, and veterans all need to band together to navigate the current and upcoming storms. Participants in Web 3.0 want a trusted resource that gives them pertinent information about projects, tokens, technology, and businesses. We are business people talking the business of crypto. We are Y-Whales.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever in the world you are today. So today is episode 20 of the YWeb 3 Navigating Frontier Technologies. So we have a pivotal approval influencing the trajectory of Bitcoin, which is really making for a lot of tax advantages. And we've got a couple experts here today that can really help us understand what that means. We're going to really dive into a lot of the kind of anticipation surrounding the upcoming halving event. Bitcoin is, let's just be clear, Bitcoin is pumping. We are having a really great time kind of watching this and seeing the reminiscence of an old bull market coming back. And we're also seeing a really major shift in conjunction with the former ETFs into institutions' perspectives on cryptocurrencies amongst a surging market. So join us as we kind of really walk through this. Today is February 29th, 2024. Bitcoin is like hitting 63,000. It had a massive run so far this week. The NASDAQ is at 16,000. And with me today, let's go ahead and start with Mr. Chris Klein. How are you, sir?
Wonderful, Jay. Thanks for having me here today. Very exciting times.
Very. So if you wouldn't mind, because I think it's a perfect opportunity, we timed this episode fabulously to have you on this week. A little bit of your background and kind of what you're working on today.
Absolutely. So I'm the co-founder and CRO of Bitcoin IRA. We were the world's first platform to offer Bitcoin investments and other crypto investments inside a self-directed IRA mechanism since about 2017. Now we have about a little over 200,000 users, and I think maybe after today we might be in the $13, $14 billion of assets under custody. It moves so fast, right, in these weeks. I'm originally from the state of Colorado. I'm born and raised on the Eastern Plains and went to college at the Prime School, University of Colorado Boulder, go Buffs, and just happy to be here and share if it's a decade of experience in crypto, it feels like three decades, especially with my great friend here, Michael McCarthy, today.
Absolutely, yeah. It's we register in dog years. It's like 4X is generally what we say our experience is. Michael, good to see you again, man. It's been a minute.
It's good to see you as well.
The world continues to turn. We're back into another favorable environment. You've done this game many times before, but you know, kind of talk about what the gap in between last time and where your focus is going to be this time.
Yeah. So as I've sort of participated in some of these over the years, I've been around since 2012. So this is not my first bull run, but hopefully it will be different. You know, everyone is unique. Everyone has its unique perspectives on how this industry is going to evolve in the coming years. But last time I was here talking about Shrimpy. That was a company that I founded in 2017. We got acquired by Bitcoin IRA last year. So we're excited to continue this journey with Bitcoin IRA. Build out this amazing company, build out the trading infrastructure, build out the technology to help people retire in America. So I think this is a very unique industry. It's a very unique company. So I'm excited to be here again.
And I think it really is fabulous. And just taking a quick second, this really showcases, there's a lot of people that don't understand our industry. They don't understand, the blockchain, cryptocurrency, tokenomics, like they just don't get it. Because for many, many years, this was just this novel little thing that kids were playing with or hackers or, it was used for Silk Road. And I think a lot of people still have in their minds, whatever the case is, we're fintech. Like we're financial technologies, we're banking industries now. And so we've kind of seen this gap close, and the cycles of the boom to bust with cryptocurrencies is just, it's different than almost any other asset class. But at this point, the cycles are relatively predictable, that we can kind of understand that, you know, what goes up must come down. And you know, when it's down, that's the time when you want to kind of really, you know, prepare for the next one that's coming up. So I love seeing, you know, an amazing platform. I still say today, you know, what you guys built with Shrimpy was one of the most amazing things. And now combining with the institutional powers, you know, with Chris, like that, now we're ready. And so let's talk about what happened this week. So diving kind of right into it. So we've seen that Bitcoin, you know, obviously had its ETFs approved right around 40K. I remember speaking to someone, and just as a funny story, and Chris, I'm sure you have these stories as well. I talked to somebody, you know, the guy's got $1 billion, wanted to deploy. We went through all the due diligence. You know, Bitcoin, I think, was at like 34, 35,000. And I said, hey, you know, totally fine. You want to put $100 million in, we'll get you, you know, your, you know, why don't we purchase you about 3,500 Bitcoins? I think that's a, like, if we're talking about a whale that has no exposure to this asset class at all. And so when you're talking about billions and you're saying, you know, I want to put 1% of this stuff in, you know, you kind of have these conversations. But I think it really showcased how little that they understood about this. They go, hey, that's fine. I want to do this. We went through all the diligence. And he goes, but I want a discount. I said, a discount on what? And he goes, well, I want a discount on the purchase. I said, it's going to change like in 2 hours. Like, you're probably going to be up. Like, you might be down, but in a long term, if you're buying this to day trade, then I'm not the person to help you here. But if you want to buy, you know, 3,500 Bitcoins, I don't think you're going to go wrong with this. And you can scale it from there. I got the text yesterday going, I fucked up.
You know, so because he didn't get the discount, he didn't get into market.
Didn't want to give a discount. I don't know.
Well, there's no such thing. I mean, they think it's like a commodity. Isn't soybeans.
Yeah, I don't know how to get a discount on this. Like, Satoshi is not going to answer his phone. But this is the story that we hear, is that the FOMO hits. No one was interested in Bitcoin at 20,000.
When they should have been.
I couldn't drag people and say, look, like, go on like swan.io and just like give them $20 a week. Go do anything just to have some exposure to this class. And same as you, the phone calls start ringing once it hit 55 and started doing its pump.
My favorite email this week was a client wrote to, and I was CC'd because probably around since 17, one of early clients goes, I was a client of yours and I left like a silly little boy. Can I please come back? And it was just perfect. It was like, you know, this is unfortunately because of the emotion and the volatility of the asset class. And like you said, at our heart as entrepreneurs, we're all kind of gamblers. And so this feels a little bit like a casino. You will see the FOMO kick in. And that's what really drives these things to we're already preparing for all time high promotions because it's pretty inevitable at this point. It's got a lot of power behind it.
And you know, Michael, you've been around for so long in this space as well, and I mean, we see this every time. I mean, we literally have the term FOMO for a reason because we know it's coming. And now that I think we touched 64K yesterday for Bitcoin, didn't we?
Yeah, for about a split second.
If not, like it was, you know, it kind of like was whiffed the net by just barely. But I mean, we almost kind of touched that. We're not even at the halving yet. I mean, like this cycle, and I don't know if it's going to go to all time highs, but I can tell you that these signals are very different than anything we've seen probably in the last 3 to 4 years because of some economic cycles.
Yeah, this run is very unique, like Mike was saying, because it's happening before the halving event, which is unique. Even when it 100x'd in one of its first halving post runs. It didn't do it beforehand. So if that means that 6 to 8 months, this is going to continue, there's a lot of folks calling for some pretty massive numbers in the last week, whether they from all places. And the naysayers are there too. It was actually an interesting tale of 2 weeks, especially just being in the trenches of the retail game here. Everyone was scratching their heads wondering what happened. The ETF came out and Bitcoin went down and just confused. But you know, the resilient hodlers, us that stayed on it, we noticed and waited, and those same folks that were naysaying are going, oh, I guess you just can't predict these things. And that's part of the nature of crypto, is it doesn't have a predictable factor to it. Right, Mike?
And I think it's really interesting to touch on that point about why it went down. And there's a couple interesting points that I think people outside of our circles would have no clue or no idea what it was. And there's two main reasons. Correct me if I'm wrong, but one was Grayscale, and the other was FTX.
Yep.
And
selling off for settlements.
And so for a lot of people not understanding, you know, like what are the FTX has been gone. FTX holds a lot of coins, and they had to do a liquidation for their bankruptcy. And what was interesting for Grayscale in the same capacity is, these ETFs didn't represent an opportunity for them to acquire Bitcoin. It represented the first legal opportunity for them to exit Bitcoin. And so I think that's the bigger deal, is that for Grayscale, I mean, I think he was acquiring in like, you know, $100 a coin in some of the capacities there. So that, like, this is true legal, you know, from a kind of that fiduciary responsibility, the first time that they could say, no, we're exiting, we have our taxes taken care of, everything is going, you know, properly in whatever the case is. So these were people that had kind of like, their cycle was over. They're done. They're getting out. They're going back to fiat. They're taking these wins. And there just wasn't enough people ready on the first, you know, 2 weeks of a new ETF to line up to be able to get it. So we had people saying, you know, just wait, it's fine, it's most likely going to go down. We didn't understand to the extent it would go down, but now we've seen kind of the liquidity run out per se on the number of sellers, you know, because anyone acquiring in the last 45 days, they're hodlers for the most part. Day trading an ETF is not a very fun thing to do, Michael.
Yeah, and I think part of it was also narrative driven. I've seen a lot of, you know, people need a motivation. When they're looking at the halvening, or when they're looking at the ETF, they're looking forward to something that's going to happen. And once that's over, a lot of people are like, okay, well, I don't know what's next. I feel like there's a little bit of uncertainty, so I'm going to pull out. Or, you know, they're unsure where the market's going to go, so they're sort of hesitant to stay in. But I think what we've seen is we need these sort of continual narratives of, right now the narrative is, let's get to all-time highs, you know, and people are very motivated to reach that. And there's sort of a buzz about, you know, when is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? Is it going to happen similar to last time? You know, sort of what's the situation? And I think each time there's this new narrative, it sort of rallies people around these checkpoints in the market, which I think is exciting, and it gets people excited.
100%. You know, so Chris, like I said, coming back over, I mean, this is what you guys do. You are, you know, kind of like soup to nuts, like you're going to take care of somebody's Bitcoin for them, hold it for them, you know, all this kind of, you know, what a normal institution would want. We're going to dive a lot into Bitcoin, but why don't we just go ahead and get the quick, you know, what you guys do, because then I think it'll be a little bit more helpful for me to interweave into some of these topics we're going to discuss later today.
All of it is the same that we'll talk about with Bitcoin and the other assets. What we just put it inside of is that beautiful tax umbrella for retirement savings. Folks commonly use traditionals, Roths, SEPs, simples. Some more complex people might have solo Ks or indie Ks out there. And about the mid-90s, there was such a thing as a self-directed IRA that most folks were using for directed real estate investment or land investment, because it gave them the ability to get assets that weren't at the traditional house like Fidelity, Charles Schwab, et cetera. And with Bitcoin, we use that functionality along with developing the security standard and a trust custodian standard. We're vertically integrated with our own trust company, Digital Trust. So like you said, in the bears you build, we didn't just bring Shrimpy into our lives, but we also bought our own regulated Nevada FID trust license and acquired another trust. So this ecosystem is growing exponentially right now of folks that are using either Roth or traditional funds. There's a blend of folks that come in. So you'll have folks that already have funds over at like a Fidelity or a Schwab, and you'll have folks that may have an old 401k or 457 or 403b if they're a nurse or fireman sitting at like a Fidelity or a Hewitt. And they'll roll parts or totals of those amounts into an account over here at Digital Trust Bitcoin IRA. And then there's a larger segment, especially some of the younger generation, that is maxing out their contributions that they can for the year. Depending upon your age, you're almost up to $75,000, $8,000 that you can put aside for every year. And so why that's a beautiful thing, if you are a hodler, which we do attract a lot of those, is you're buying in. We had entry level of $200, $250, our first Bitcoin IRAs back in 17, 16. And you're holding that without the implications of capital gains. If you buy, sell, you're going to grow capital gains free, and then you'll take, now, upon distribution, in the same method as a Roth or a traditional later in life at 59 and a half or 70 and a half or 71 now and a half, I think it is, for mandatory distribution. So a basic IRA, just with the specialty of getting into this alternative class 5 or 6 years ago, has really been our specialty.
Before we start on our next topic, here's something really exciting. Everyone struggles with these really highly complex, you know, intricate Ethereum names. ENS has a solution that's really game-changing for you. Revolutionizing your digital identity with ENS. Transform long, complex Ethereum name addresses into easy-to-remember names, safely, securely, and uniquely yours. Visit ens.app to get started today, and ENS welcomes you to the new internet. No, it's fabulous. And I think that this is, you know, when I started this, I said, like, we're no longer this, like, novel little, like, you know, I always keep my Beanie Babies around just so we can talk about it. Like, we've moved past the past of, you know, this being novel. We're now fintech. I mean, we are, like, when I went, last year, I went to a number of conferences. I know you guys do the same. Money 2020, I think, is, like, is you know, United States fintech as you can possibly get. There was not a single booth or a single exhibitor there that did not have, you know, cryptocurrency blockchain or some type of integration into this entirely new world that's coming. And I think that it really showcases, you know, that you guys, and you've been doing this for a while, like, this isn't new. It's not like somebody just woke up. The ETFs are new. But what you guys have been doing has been happening for a while. It's just taking the rest of them a little bit of time to catch up to, like, no, this is real. And this is it's not going away. And I think what's interesting is we start looking at the kind of the inflows and outflows. You know, you kind of submitted something. I mean, we know historically when ETFs are granted of hard to, you know, acquire assets. And let's be clear, Bitcoin's hard to acquire. I do not in any way, shape, or form think it's easy. You can have a Coinbase account. That's great. But if you're a financial institution, you're a bank, you're someone large, it is not easy to get seven or eight figures into cryptocurrencies. It is extremely difficult to do so. We're just now finally seeing the rails, you know, available to make that happen.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it's important why the ETF tool is there. One thing to call about differences between real Bitcoin, I call it real, I know it's so weird, and the ETF is, there are a few characteristics, and I'm more of a purist at heart. So they're not necessarily one-to-one ratio, all the offerings. There's no distribution capacity. So if you're holding long-term and it's retirement age or otherwise, but you don't want to get rid of your crypto, because maybe, just knock on wood, it's become the reserve currency for the world and you want to use it. But that you have that tool available to take it out as Bitcoin, as opposed to liquidate and then take out cash or whatever fiat's available. Those are two big characteristics that are, I think, important to see as differentials. And the trading hours. We were looking at, I think, 40% of our trades over the last 3 years take place after business hours. Even this week's a great example. These runs, I kept getting woken up by clients in New York and at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning this week with the screenshot. We always try to beat each other to the screenshot of the next threshold. So 62,000, 63,000, who gets the screenshot and sends it off to everybody? And so it does this after hours, and that tool is not necessarily available in all the ETF models. So that, it is important. It's available, but if how you're looking at your strategy with crypto, it's important to understand there are differences between the two.
You're hitting a lot of really good points on here, and this is there's a problem that traditional finance needs to understand, which is Bitcoin essentially had an IPO. Like, the way I kind of look at these ETFs is that it's the first time, you know, an asset IPO'd. And let's be clear, Bitcoin does not care about the NASDAQ's trading hours in any way, shape, or form. Like, it's almost, I get that it's great and there's, you know, the financial pipes to get it done. But if your sole access, as you just said, is through an ETF, like, a lot of things happen after hours and a lot of things happen over the weekends that you will just be quite simply unable to take advantage of because the world is still running on, you know, the exchanges are still running on 1980s technology.
It's like putting gas in a Tesla, is what I've always called it. A little controversial, but to me, when I because I've been around since as long as not as long as Mike, but ETFs were a conversation point in 17-18. You saw the futures contracts come out, and those kind of fell off because it was already volatile. You didn't need to put a contract around it. And this evolution is, to me, I've always said, you know, why would you put gas? It's like putting a gas in the Tesla. Why would you need that? Bitcoin stands alone, but it needed to get its way into mainstream and traditional finance for the next evolution of its maturity. And that's where we're headed.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk about a little bit of the history, because it doesn't always, it's not always the same, but it usually rhymes. And so Michael, you've been here before. Like, everyone's focused on the halving. It's not a static number. There's no dates of that it's going to launch. It's based on the number of blocks. And so right now I think it's mid-April, I think. Is that maybe I'm correct? So it's kind of fluctuating because the big miners, like the big guys, the Marathons and the DCGs and all them, like, they are throwing every cent that they possibly have into horsepower today to get as much to produce as many Bitcoins as they can while it's still at the difficulty level it is. And I think that this is important. And so, Michael, I'd love to hear a little bit of your background or your thoughts on this. Number one, this is not the first halving. This has happened many times before. And every time, you know, when you reduce the number, reduce the supply, which is what the miners do. So, you know, we saw this massive, 10,000 Bitcoins purchased. And I think that's really, like, when people think about it, it's not that big of a number. It's, you know, like for anything else, only 10,000 were purchased, but less than 1,000 are being produced every day. And that number is going to drop to around 450. It'll be under 500. So that means that you have to have sellers. And right now I would say that the hodlers are in a good position that got in over the last 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I've always believed is that crypto is a game of patience as well. You know, the people who are willing to stay in the market go through these cycles of, you know, halvening after halvening after halvening for years and years and years, they're going to see the benefits of the sort of structure of how Bitcoin was built. And this is a case where very soon, the supply will decrease. And not only that, but we don't know if these miners are going to sell those Bitcoin, if they're going to hold those Bitcoin, what they're going to do with those Bitcoin. So even with that as a increase in supply, that doesn't mean that supply is even going to be sold. So there's a lot of considerations that sort of go into the market dynamics, but the halvening is certainly an aspect that we've seen, you know, as mentioned already, over the years, usually that does influence the price of Bitcoin. Whether that will happen again this time, you know, who knows? But that is the history that we've seen.
You know, the pipes are open. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, the story of Bitcoin has not changed one bit. Nothing. It's the exact same asset, that people are buying for pennies. We did get some interesting emails, but I mean, the asset is the same. And the one thing that I love about Bitcoin is Bitcoin doesn't care. Doesn't care if you made an ETF for it. Doesn't care if a country likes it or doesn't like it. Doesn't care, you know, what the sentiment is or if there's a war in the world. Bitcoin was designed to live forever, but at a kind of like, hey, this is this thing that's going to exist. And it survived, you know, all these cycles. It's, you know, I can't even count the number of times Bitcoin's going to zero. And when it was I think it hit like 17,000 this last cycle. I literally, you know, people reach out to me and they go, do you think now's a good time to purchase? I said, I think 20,000. I think 30,000 was a good time to purchase. Grab it, you know, put some money in it, do, you know, put something into it as soon as you can. And I had literally same week, I had other people that didn't purchase it because they thought it would go down to 12. They thought it would go down to 10. They thought it would go down to 5,000. And so they didn't, they just did nothing. And I go, but that's fine. That's okay. No one cares. It doesn't care. It's not worried about your feelings. They're not going to do a rollback. You don't get another chance at this. And
it doesn't have a 10K. It doesn't come out and say all these great things. Yeah.
Like, here's my earnings.
Yeah. It doesn't care. That's a great way of putting it. I also like that, Jay, that it's in such direct contrast to money as we know it. So I look at the halvening as the granddaddy feature for me. That this was when I was going down the orange rabbit hole, that when I came across this component, I was like, man, this is going to change the world. They're not going to like it, but it's going to change the world because it's a different way of thinking about money because you're not thinking about it. If you put it right next and it's at a time where you look at what's happening to the dollar and just global currency overall, it's a tale of two different currency types. One is produced at, I guess, at this point, infinite nature, the US dollar. It's printed, it's created, its M1 supply is always growing because it somewhat benefits the producer. The guy that puts out a stimulus check might get reelected, so he's going to want to continue to print money. Well, Bitcoin doesn't have elections. It doesn't run for governor, president, or otherwise. And it went the reverse and said, you know what? We're going to punish the producers of the money as supply goes up so that we can build this anti-inflationary hedge inside of it. And now these two worlds are about to collide. And one's on strong footing and the other one is kind of towards the maturation of its empire as the US dollar. It's just happening. It's a nature. We were gold standard, then we were OPEC standard, and we're floating in these baskets of currencies, and the world is changing every day. I saw a funny thing, I guess Snowden tweeted yesterday, that it's going to come out in some months that a sovereign nation has secretly been buying Bitcoin. And so everybody's guessing who it is, right? And there may be more of that to come. BRICS was an idea. But it didn't have the weapons, right? It was a paper tiger. But now with crypto and other things, gold and how treasuries are sitting out there and our debt as a risk, it is a whole new ball game. It's a whole new map that we're living in today.
The United States currency is now based on debt.
That's a nice way to put it.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But I think what we got on screen right now, the chart on the screen, I think is really important to talk about because there is a lot of this is perception. No one needs Bitcoin. There's nothing to buy with it. It's a horrible currency. I continuously say, spending Bitcoin like money is a terrible idea. It's a great financial vehicle, which is I think what we can all agree on. It's a great store of value. It's a store of energy in some capacities. But the concept of it, of where it is today, which is, it's an investment vehicle, is huge. And so we look right here and say, I don't think of gold as a good investment. I just don't. It's not my generation. I'm a Gen Xer. And I can promise you my kid, I've got a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old and, we employ a whole bunch of millennials in my other businesses. None of them think of gold as a good investment. They don't like, it's not there, but they hear Bitcoin and that's what they're starting to think. Even if they don't own it, they understand that that's a better investment. And we look at this chart, we're not even close to the market value of gold, which is a very fungible item at this point.
I'll disagree a little bit with you. I am a gold guy and a silver guy as well. I am a big Bitcoin guy, but it probably is part of like my grandfathers and dads, that both of them were kind of gold bugs. It's something about having it and its fungibility and if something major was to happen and you got to have cash, but or gold or silver and Bitcoin somewhere where it's accessible and whatever may happen in the world. I'm not like a doomsdayer, but this world's a little crazy. And so I always have some available and I try to, my daughter gets excited. She steals my silver coins. I found a whole bunch of them in her room the other day. I was like, what is this? She goes, my allowance.
Okay. Hopefully she doesn't put those in the bubblegum machines.
No, definitely not.
But looking at this, and Michael, I remember in your past platforms, like you compared, everything to Bitcoin and to cryptocurrencies. Like there was like, hey, here's what the soda market looks like compared to this. Like there was just you had kind of unlimited there. Is gold the best representation of where Bitcoin is going? Or is there something else that we should be looking at?
In my opinion, there's nothing that compares to Bitcoin. So I know we oftentimes compare things to Bitcoin, but when you think about the different types of assets, Bitcoin is a new asset. It's not a similar asset to anything else that we've seen. When you think of currencies, it's not really a currency because Bitcoin has global liquidity. Anybody in the world can access Bitcoin. and people want Bitcoin. It is not a currency that is forced upon you. You know, nobody is getting told that right now, at least, that they have to use Bitcoin for their exchange of value. Whereas, you know, other currencies, fiat currencies, oftentimes those are forced upon people. But it's also not like gold necessarily. You know, gold probably has a somewhat limited supply. We don't know. You know, we don't know if an asteroid could, you know, get mined for a bunch of gold. We don't know if in the future, if we can sort of transform other elements into gold, which would be sort of problematic for gold investors. But Bitcoin is for sure capped at how many Bitcoin you could have. And it's also sort of this foundation for the internet age. So, you know, we're becoming a more digital species, and we need value to represent the direction that we're going as a species. And yep. This is a, you know, sort of becoming a digital world. So not just Bitcoin, but there's all these other assets as well that are being built, where, you know, like Ethereum, bringing in smart contracts, being able to do more sophisticated computation on the network. You know, all of these things help us build a more digital world where you can transfer value in a very seamless and easy way. So while I like the comparison of gold because it relates to people from different generations, from the fundamental, is it like gold? I would say, in my opinion, no, it's completely different. Yeah.
That's perfect. It's better, right?
Yes.
So, you know, as we kind of start diving into this, and I think, listen, the number one challenge you have with any asset class, it doesn't have to be Bitcoin, doesn't have to be cryptocurrency, we can talk real estate, we can talk anything else, you have to have liquidity that's able to get in and out. those on-ramps in and on-ramps out are the key to anything. If it's a really hard to get asset, and commercial real estate is generally one of those. Like, if I've got buildings for sale, like from the time I say I want to sell this to the time it actually gets sold can sometimes be a year. Like if you got a buyer that's ready to go, it's still 90 plus days. While it's considered liquid, it's not great. So in Bitcoin was, not that Chris didn't make it very easy to do so in a variety of ways, but for the most people, it was hard. You know, for institutions that say, look, I'm allowed to trade in this platform. This is what I'm allowed to use. I can't do anything else. They were kind of stuck because their options were limited. The ETFs did open up a very large pipe that's allowing liquidity to flow in and proper custody, which I think is huge to have as well. Meaning that none of these people, they're not going to just wake up and lose their Bitcoin because they clicked on a bad link or anything else, which happens so often. So, you know, seeing that Fidelity is already upping its allocations into the funds that they purchase, I think is huge. You know, Chris, I'm sure you've gotten so many calls from people saying, like, what do we do? How do we manage this? What are we supposed to be doing?
Over the years, for sure. Because it's a really liquid asset that comes with a whole paradigm of security that we're not used to. So being able to put your gold and silver in a safe or a safety deposit box, keeping your bank cash at a bank behind the security, and those all had to evolve. Like credit cards started in such a rudimentary sense, and then now you've got 2FA and MFA and all these things to protect people because you are your own greatest risk, right? You click on the wrong link, you take the wrong phone call, whatever it might be. So it has this security paradigm that people have to catch up to, understanding how wallets and keys work and seeds and splitting signatures. And it was even for, I consider myself a pretty smart dude, and we went back and forth. I remember just getting an opinion letter early on from any lawyer was what you had to basically break it down to. Like, it was like a coloring book of how wallets work and how keys work and how these things work. And so once you get over that paradigm, and we've gotten there now because the ETF has made it so institutions are comfortable with the custody solution that's brought forth, and that these assets are where they're supposed to be and they're secured the way that they're supposed to be, which is great. I would have to say that's the jump that I think held it back for some time as far as an asset class. And Fidelity bringing in, I think what they jump at it, 1% recommended crypto now. I think I read yesterday that on their bundles.
Yeah, 1% all the way up to 3%.
All the way up to 3%. So they're upping it. And I think somebody, of course, because Twitter does this, somebody did the math and calculated that if a certain percentage of Fidelity users did it, that you would be looking at $750,000 Bitcoin, which, that, you know, math doesn't lie. Michael always likes to say, don't say these things, Chris. But somebody else said it. I'm just repeating what they said.
There's, you know, I've had this conversation, you know, and I even asked, you know, Michael Saylor directly. He's been on this, one of our other programs, you know, a long time ago. And he likes to do this, like, Bitcoin's going to go to $1 million. I'm like, okay, I want to believe you. What does that mean? Does that mean that, like, hyperinflation has hit and the United States dollar is, you know, now Zimbabwe, you know, type currency? Or is that truly... there is so many asset classes that have failed to have, you know, store of value, that this is the only thing that now works. And I didn't get a clear answer because you just hold it forever. You just buy it. He's brilliant. And, you know, it's amazing to see, you know, what he's done, you know, to acquire, I think now 193,000 Bitcoin. And he's made more profits off Bitcoin than his public company has, like, ever, just from buying and holding Bitcoin. So it's become a very interesting story.
Yeah, Saylor's one of those guys where he'll just, like, well, if you don't get it, I just don't have the time here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of seeing, I'm just jumping around here. I mean, it's got to be great for you, though, you know, Chris and Michael, to kind of, like, have your theses from so many years ago be validated by these giants that are just now like, oh, of course we're into Bitcoin. Of course we're going to offer it to all of our clients and customers. It's a great thing. These guys, if we went back a year, they were trashing Bitcoin. They were trashing this. They were trashing all this stuff. They couldn't say more horrible. It's a terrorist tool. It's this and that. And now they're like, everyone needs it in their portfolio. Like, come on.
And not just the big guys, but your friends and your family. I don't know if Michael could attest to this, but they all thought I was crazy. I came to California and said, we're going to build this Bitcoin company. And I'm sure Michael had the same folks who was like, you're going to leave where and go do what back in 16 and 15 in those years? Because it went up and down. Everybody thought you were a genius in 17 into early 18. And then they were calling to make sure you were okay in 19 and 20. And then they said, why didn't you tell me to do this in 21? And then they kind of disappeared for 22, especially with all the fraud that happened, that era of just Celsius and FTX and everything. People were like, you're not associated with any of this, are you? I was like, no, I'm not. But that was being just a person in crypto. And I'm a vocal person with my friends about it. And I do a lot of these things. So they all know that this is my thing. It's an undulation of friendship and family love that you get.
Well, I think this is interesting, and Michael, love your perception on this, because I've been around since 2010, but didn't really do much until, you know, 2015, 2016, and then really went kind of full time in 2020. But what really I've kind of seen happen is there's a splintering, you know, in between what you would kind of consider like the dark web, if you're talking about web one, and then the e-commerce web, you know, which is what all of us work on today, which is it flows, it works, it does a lot of things. Doesn't mean there's not shadier parts of the internet that you may or may not want to go on, that you're using Tor or VPNs to do some weird things with. It's the same technology, but it's two very different use cases. And we're seeing that right now, I think, in the kind of blockchain-based fintech companies, which is what I like to refer to them. It's kind of how the bucket that I would put, you know, what you guys do. Like, we're trying to follow the rules. We want to work within the rules and regulations, but that doesn't mean that the degens aren't out there making some crazy, you know, insane stuff that is cool to see, but it's violating, you know, a lot of laws in its place.
Yeah. And I do think both is necessary. So when I started in 2012, you know, most people thought it was crazy, you know, Bitcoin. Just the concept of Bitcoin was crazy. And back then, I was buying as many GPUs as I could to run mining operations out of my, at the time I was in college, so out of my dorm room. And it was just crazy. It was just a very weird thing to be doing.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed over time. Every time, even in crypto, when there's a new thing that comes out, people look at you like you're crazy. When NFTs came out, people are like, what are these? Like, why would you ever want this? Or flash loans. People were like, what's the point of a flash loan? You know, every time we have these new innovations, it doesn't make sense to people when it first happens. And I think that's important, though. These people who are pushing the boundaries, inventing new things, trying new things, even just out of fun, you know, like, I imagine if I could do this, what would it be like? That's what's sort of pushing the boundaries of this space and allows us to get to places that we never even knew were possible. So, like, you know, people never imagined 20 years ago that you could combine all these different technologies to make blockchain. You know, some people didn't think it was possible. So, you know, it's a very interesting space, especially for people who are a little bit weird, a little bit on the edges, who want to do things that other people have said are impossible or are difficult, or, you know, like Bitcoin IRA, creating the first IRA in crypto and in taking that risk when most people would probably say that's crazy, you know? Like, why would you want to do that? And it turns out because a lot of other people want to do that as well. A lot of people want to participate.
Yeah. And it's not a new phenomenon for crypto like this, right? One of my favorites is on the Today Show when they saw the @ sign for the first time for an email address. And we're like, what is, they were all live on camera going, what is that little thing? And then my favorite, I recently ran it back into, is they're at a Burger King in like Eastern Texas in 1980 something. And they're showing people you can buy a hamburger with a credit card, and all the naysayers, well, I got this cash in my pocket. I don't know what I'm going to ever need that for. And you fast forward a few years, few decades, and everything starts to click. I think the folks in crypto really, whether we are or not, we try to live that adventurous spirit of being on that cutting edge. And that's a lot of the things you guys are doing in your world, Jay, is, you know, we're doing crazy things. When I was learning about some of the things you're up to, I'm like, wow. We're behind. It's kind of how it felt.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Beyond Enterprises, the ultimate 360-degree partner for companies ready to embrace the power of blockchain in their business strategies. Beyond Enterprises stands out as a beacon of expertise with a blockchain-agnostic approach that has seen successful projects on Ethereum, EOS, and Arc. Guided by blockchain thought leaders and fueled by inspired advisors, the team has played a pivotal role in over 40 successful ventures spanning token generation events, security token offerings, exchanges, and more. From healthcare to travel, finance, and beyond, Beyond Enterprises has left a massive mark on diverse industries. Elevate your business strategy today with pioneers of blockchain integrations, Beyond Enterprises, trusted 360 partner. You got one asset. We want to create assets. So, yep. I mean, we're you know, two different spectrums. You know, we want, you know, our goal is, you know, with FinRamp and some of the things we're doing is you're entirely correct. We want to say, you know, not one person can send an email. We want anyone in the world to be able to send an email, and we want it to be compliant, and we want it to work on any computer. So yeah, we work on a lot of the tokenization of real world assets and making sure that they can flow, that, you know, one day that maybe you guys can accept more than, you know, Bitcoin, that somebody wants to put commercial real estate or various investments into there. So like, but the technology rides on the same rail. So no, we love that. And we agree. We believe regulation is what gets us there.
My daughter was leaving for school this morning, and I usually take her, but I had this. So she goes, well, she starts asking the 20 questions. Who are you having a podcast with? What's it about? And I gave her like the quickest thing as possible. I was like, this guy wants to tokenize the earth. And I just saw her freeze for a second because I've kept her to speed. I have these little commemorative coins, Ethereum, Ripple, Litecoin, and gave her one word associations when she was like 4 years old. So now she's 10 and she is into this stuff. She's proud of it. She makes remixes to rap songs instead of Big Bank Take Little Bank. It's Bitcoin Take All Banks. Like that's just who she is. She's adorable. And I saw her freeze for a second because now I know she's going to come back tonight while we're doing homework, go, Dad, talk to me about tokenizing. Because I really haven't gone into it with her. So, Jay, be prepared for a call from a 10-year-old sometime this week.
let's make it happen. And I'll let my 12-year-old try to explain it because we go through the same things. Yeah, my favorite thing when I do the FinRamp pitch is people, you know, any investor goes, well, what's the total addressable market? I said, it's about $1.4 quadrillion. And they go, you're full of, you know what? And I said, no, it's legit. That's the estimated whatever the case is. But if we get 1% of that, like, is that a win? And they go, well, you're just boiling the ocean. I said, no. that's the beauty is, you know, the entire concept of what we do is not as complicated as most people think. I think we've overcomplicated it because we're still in the early phases trying to figure out, you know, what's this chain, what's that chain. But the concepts of why Bitcoin is doing this, and you know, right on the screen, you know, here is BlackRock. They came out and trashed, like just a few months ago, trashed on Bitcoin. This is that. And they did $1 billion of trading, you know, in their first 30 days. And this is one of the largest asset holders on the planet, and $1 billion to them, that's nothing.
No, that was when they did it in one day, right?
Yeah, this is just one day.
Yeah, so this is just a single day of trading,
which BlackRock has, I don't know, like $14 trillion or something like that. So this is nothing to them. But suddenly, this is a very easy asset for them to sell. It's a very easy asset for them to hold. And it has a lot of, you know, kind of inherent value. And so suddenly it goes, we're getting calls going, well, what else can we do in the same capacity? I said, well, I can do anything you want. And so I think this is really showcasing that suddenly, you know, illiquid assets like real estate, like trade finance, like corporate bonds and equity, you know, TARPs and everything else, this is where we want to see it going. This is where we want to see that fluidity and liquidity, but still, you know, legally, you know, responsible to how it's managed. But like, this is a big deal.
I also see it as a one-way street. So when you're thinking about tokenization, I think over time, tokenization will continue to consume asset classes, and then it will become the standard. And mm-hmm. there's no reason to go backwards. There's no reason to go from tokenization back to these, you know, the current way that things are being done. So in my point of view, it's like, it's kind of like the internet. You know, the internet yep. over time consumed all of these industries, consumed the news industry, consumed the video and TV industries, consumed, you know, it's sort of just like slowly consumed each industry. And that's what's going to happen with crypto, with blockchain, with tokenization. It's going to be this slow sort of just consuming every asset, turning it into these essentially better forms of these assets.
I completely agree. I mean, listen, I completely agree. For obvious reasons, I've got a company that does this. But the things that we think about and the directions that we want to go, you know, it has to be future. It can't just be a stock ticker that represents a piece of paper that's in a centralized database somewhere that no one has access to. The entire concept of tokenization is that title lives on the blockchain, and that we all see it, we all understand it, and it goes from there. And that's the nice thing is Bitcoin is so basic. It is like the most basic thing we can think about. It exists, and it can be fractionalized very easily. So that's huge. The concept of being able to take those same concepts and fractionalize, you know, other large investments means that you have investment opportunity, not just to more people that maybe can or can't afford, you know, to buy an entire, you know, commercial building, but you also have liquidity all around the world from people that do want to have different asset classes that do want to invest. And so it really opens up the size and scale in so many ways. And so My absolute favorite investment guidance is Mr. Jim Cramer. And if you've never spent any time with him, the better account to follow is the inverse Cramer account, because literally just says, like, I mean, and this was funny when he said Bitcoin is garbage, it's going to nothing. The entire crypto universe was like, thank you, Jim. Oh my God, please trash it some more, because he's just wrong so bad in so many ways. And this was one of them. 250% up since he said it.
You gotta love a financial entertainer that has made his claim to fame as being wrong all the time. Like, it's like being the weatherman in Colorado. They should just get up there and go, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes and everything will change.
And you know what? I think it really does signify to me, and this is what's really important. And I'm going to jump back over to, you know, the types of platforms that Michael builds. If you think that gold is, you know, gold is something that a talking head should be talking about, that you can trust that. There is no information. There's nothing. Like, I reject almost every YouTuber. I reject almost any person, because the data is too fluid. It moves too fast. And you have to have really good tools to be able to understand it. You know, if you're listening to this guy talk about it, he's got some information in front of him that may be 2, 3, 4 years old. He has no idea what's coming down the pipe. This isn't what he does. You need to be able to look at metrics and look at charts. and make very fluid decisions. And let's be clear, AI is coming into this game. You know, I've always said cryptocurrencies and blockchain is not a human thing. This is where AI and the machines, we can control them to be able to do what, have them do what they want, because otherwise it's almost fair game.
Yep. I kind of think that cryptocurrency is going to be that check to valuing AI for its purposes. So they're so harmonious with each other. They'll work. And there's already, it's early. So always, I stay away from super early tokens and coins that are out there, especially with this regulatory environment we're in. But there are places that they're merging concepts of AI and cryptocurrency together in token format right now. There's a lot of groups that are doing that. And so that I think we'll see probably, because what's going to happen, like Mike was saying, the narrative. So we're going to get through halving and then we're going to hit all-time highs. And then what's going to be the next thing that people are going to be talking about? And I think that marriage between those two and AI, you know, for the average Joe, I love being in the smart people circles, but I also like to be in the normal people circles. So like my coffee shop experience every day, it's down here, down the street in Sherman Oaks, and over the years, there's a group of 10 old guys that go there every single day, and they're there for a few hours. And so I make a joke here or there and got to know them, and now I have a seat at the table. And so I'll go, and it's just that group now, they're aged, and they probably are tired of all the new stuff, but they certainly know how to use Instagram to talk to girls. And I've seen all kinds of other things they're doing with their cell phones. They haven't started the conversations about AI yet. It's not there. One of them is using it to help him write books. Like, he uses ChatGPT to help write books. So that's pretty, and he's pumping them out, and they're not bad, actually. I'm like, hey, these are pretty good books that he's put. He puts a pretty good outline together, and he quoted me in one, which I was really excited about. Really nice.
There you go.
But it's not there yet. And that'll maybe be what we're talking about more in 25 and 26.
Yeah, it's going to have its cycle. And what's really interesting is the same processing power that's needed for AI is the same stuff that's being used for Bitcoin. So it's very heavy. It's very hard. It's proof of work. We're just now starting to see the, you know, eco, you know, people starting to be concerned about AI because it uses way more power than Bitcoin has ever, you know, could ever dream of. Like, so they've already eclipsed on this stuff and they haven't even gotten started. Like, AI is still novelty compared to, you know, Bitcoin. Bitcoin's, you know, we see a lot of exahash, you know, coming online, but it's really fractional. And the other side of this is, you know, you can pause Bitcoin. You know, like, so in Texas, when there was power grid issues, you know, Marathon and all the big miners, they just go, oh, well, we're sorry, you're having some problems. We're going to go ahead and stop our production and you let us know when we can come back online. You can't do that with a SaaS platform. You can't like suddenly say, well, all the AI had to go down because there was an ice storm in Texas. People, like, their businesses rely on everything else. The worst thing that happens with Bitcoin is it just runs a little bit slower. The miners miss out on some things, but it still works. You know, that's decentralized. It's all over the planet. So I think that there's really going to be a lot of things happening here overall. You know, jumping over into the next one, we know it's a pump because, like, Coinbase crashed. Coinbase has had no issues for a long time, and I think what's interesting, and this is what I think people need to understand, Coinbase isn't just an online exchange for retail. They are the custodians for, I think, like 80% of the ETFs. So they're getting hit with not only their traffic, but they're also getting hit with all the traffic on the major exchanges.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. How do you guys handle, like, do you guys have big inflows like that?
Interesting point. They certainly aren't alone in these places. And me and Michael are kind of chuckling right now because we had a very, not a major one, but we did have a minor disruption yesterday. And it was based upon volume because some of our vendors are watching our volume. And then all of a sudden our volume picks up. And it's kind of like if you start spending a whole bunch of money on your credit card, Amex will go, hey, is everything good? Like, so it's there's these throttles that happen. And yeah, and they just click in because Bitcoin does such volatility movements like this, where you go from 2 weeks ago where logins were X and a week this week they're Y and they're exponentially larger. These older traditional systems and connections and APIs and these things, they will have a tendency to find that fail gap. Like, it will happen. The holes in the code or whatever it might be will show themselves. It was interesting to see Coinbase. I'm sure they weren't the only ones. Coinbase is just so transparent about everything that's happening. And they have so many users that a split second that they're down is noticed by millions, right? But yeah. I think in general, anybody that's in the crypto space, we had to go through these waves of growth. I know Michael could talk to this as Shrimpy grew his volumes were growing. You find that your technology just isn't there. It can't compute fast enough. And you've got to do something different. You got to rip out wasted code. You got to make things more efficient here, sequence things differently to handle the next evolution of volume.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people miss or don't realize, the scale that you have to sort of accelerate all of your development. You know, there was some talk on Twitter where people were like, how could Coinbase not be ready for a 10x increase? And the reason is because it might have been a 100x increase. You know, yeah. Like when we were trying to scale in 2020, within 2 months, we went from $1 million in trading volume a day to $150 million a day, which is 150x over the course of 2 months. So we went from trying to scale, you know, we had 10 servers at the start. We had 500 servers after 2 months. So it's like scaling from 10 to 500 over the course of 2 months is not easy. You know, your engineers are working around the clock, trying to scale, trying to optimize things, trying to, you know, make sure that you don't go down. Where are your bottlenecks? How do you solve these problems? It's a very, very complicated problem. And most industries don't have that problem. Most companies, you know, they get...
Or the volatility problem. Yeah. So it's not, growth is not as linear. I mean, it can be linear in some businesses, but those are kind of boring businesses, right? For us. And most of the folks probably listening aren't in those really linear, boring ones. Everything's got a little volatility, but you can't just say, okay, we're going to commit $10 million to technology infrastructure. And you do that on January 1st, 2018. You might be bankrupt by the same time in 2019 because bear markets are no joke. They call it a winter for a reason. It is cold. It is mean. It is tough. It cleans out the riffraff. It's right now, the last one has really consolidated our industry. But that's why guys like Michael and I are together now, because we're like, hey, buddy, let's do this together so that the next run we can work even better together and give a better product to clients out there. So, but yeah, it's, I mean, you can't just, I mean, it's funny. We'll get with Teresa Fetty, who's a YPO, or she's one of our founders. She's actually the CEO of our trust company. They call her the godfather of the trust industry and self-directed. She's just amazing. Jay, you should have her on sometime. She,
100%.
She'll talk your ear off. Actually, two of our founders are YPOs. The other one, the CEO of Bitcoin IRA, is YPO Los Angeles. Camilla is, or Beverly Hills. So you got Vegas, Beverly Hills represented. She went through the self-directed industry from, you know, 2000s into 2010. It had somewhat of a linear growth to it. And she'll even say, like, Chris, I now understand when she come in and she say, Chris, why do you only have a 3-month roadmap? And I'm like, well, how long do you want it to be? And she's like, it should be at least a year. And I was like, I think 3 months is too long. And she goes, what do you mean? Is it because this game is changing day by day? And if I commit to something, I have to be like, it had to be super agile. And now as a business, especially Michael coming in, and he's really spearheading all the product evolution that we're putting together right now, not just with the things he was doing at Shrimpy, but the things we can do better in our onboarding process, all these things, he's forcing me to slow down and go, Chris, I get it. You got to be agile, but we can't bounce. We have to integrate these things intermittently and do these things in steps. And so being a startup guy, and Michael knows that he went through it too, in this industry, it's like, you want to commit to scale, but you're terrified of being ready for scale when it's not there. And now you've got 500 servers running that are costing you X, and you're not using the capacity of a tenth of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, it is. I mean, we are going from, and you know, nothing you guys built would be considered hobbyist grade, because you guys were professionals. But quite simply, like, to scale it in the worlds that we have, I mean, it's insane for people that don't understand what that means. I mean, it can go from like, hey, my data server costs are $10,000 a month to my data server costs are now, you know, $300,000, $400,000 a month, if not higher. And you only and it's surge. It's just happening in random spurts. And so, you never want to go down, but you also, like, you know, like you have to balance budgets and stuff. Like we're not, none of us are government funded here.
And software programs aren't very friendly, right?
No.
I don't know anybody that's ever nailed the envelopes they need for DocuSign. I don't think anybody's ever gotten a number right. They either go over and pay the overages or they go under and they don't get to roll over the minutes. And for all the years I've used them, I tell them every time I do a renewal of any type, I'm like, why are you guys still doing it this way? I'm sure I'm not the only guy that just says, this is, you're helping fintech. Fintech is, it needs to be nimble, and you're putting me on a 3-year or 1-year contract that I just can't do anything about. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, but you know what? I think what we're seeing is you're right. The crypto winter was real. It was bad. I mean, we saw people that had good revenue, good teams, good products. They're gone. You know, they may come back in some capacity, but it's not. But what we're seeing is number one, the roll-ups, which is good. It's healthy. You know, like I think you guys are a great team together, and you're going to do amazing things, and you're going to grow and scale and, you know, have consolidated resources because you kind of ebb and flow with different buckets of what you guys are doing. But, you know, like Marathon, you know, these guys are really, you know, when you think about the big institutions, and I always go back to Web 1. And early Web 1, we all had servers, you know, in our offices. That you wanted to host a website, you literally hosted your website. And then it kind of went to that next phase, which is like, hey, we're going to consolidate. We're going to go to, you know, we're going to go to colo centers. And so instead of it being in your office, you know, we're now going to have a joint place where we're all going to go. It's got the right power and everything else, but still your servers, it's still your stuff. And, you know, we've now moved to the cloud, and the cloud can just go, you know, scales up, scales down, and does all those things. It doesn't really work for what we do yet. There's not really a good cloud solution for these things. And so we're kind of at that colo center space right now, where the Marathons and you know, these other guys, like, I mean, they're just investing billions of dollars and they're hyper efficient in what they do. And it's, again, it's the same thing. Like, you guys are going to be able to scale and grow together, but like the average guy that's got a, you know, Bitcoin miner in his garage, which, you know, Michael, you did back in college, they're hobbyists at this point. You know, we're moving into like a real asset class.
Yeah, it's legit infrastructure. Just like the gold rush guys would go out and chase with pans and do that in the 1890s or whatever the California was in the 1840s. I think I always get it wrong. 49ers, 1949, 1840. Yeah, 49ers. That group is now, you watch these shows that they, how they do their mining excavations and going to find things now. Just the same concept. You have to run it by, the industry has to be run by professionals.
Yeah. You know, and let's just kind of also, I always like to state, you know, really clearly how early we are. If anyone thinks that we're like, oh, we're like, this thing is going to take a decade to get to maturity. Like we move fast, but we still have a long way to go. And so these ETFs, which are brand new, they're providing a lot of liquidity, that we're seeing that pump here. Like as of right now, they have 300,000 Bitcoin. Okay, so all nine of the ETFs, 300,000 Bitcoin. That's only $17 billion. Like these large institutions, this isn't even showing up on their top 100 assets. And so like they're going to want it to be like they're making this investment because they do want to see $1 million Bitcoin. Like they're at this point, they're invested, and that's what we all want to see. So I think that's where the HODL mentality really hits. Kind of bringing this thing to a close real quick, you know, Michael and Chris, for people that want to know more, people that want to kind of like find out their business, what's the best way to kind of hit you guys up and make sure they're number one, knowing what you guys are working on, and two, they're able to get a hold of you?
Kind of a cool thing. We're not the only two humans that work at Bitcoin IRA. So, you know, a lot of times you see where crypto companies go full digital, right? And they just robot everything. And and we went the other way, where we went service first, because that's the one differentiator we could have, especially in the IRA. We weren't asking people to do $100 of their bank account to a Coinbase account. But that there was, we were having people invest their retirement, whether it was a rollover 401k or transfer. So we brought in specialists from the very beginning. Our retirement solution specialist, and we have some VPs of that. And you can go to bitcoinira.com, or you can just go on the App Store and download it. And right there, you can call right away. It's an option right away, and there'll be somebody. Or you can go through the onboarding process, and Michael's been mastering it. I'm always tinkering with it, so he gets frustrated with me, but he's mastering it for us. But yeah, that's, you'll have a human being to work with for the life of your account. And somebody will call you for sure. Once you register, you will get a phone call to help. What we like to break down is a good understanding of what it takes to do this, what the custodian does, what the security is about. We're exclusive partners with BitGo. What assets are available and how the platform works and keeps the person secure at the same time. Because you've got distributions, conversions, ongoing contributions, recurring. There's a lot of things that come in play when you're talking about an IRA account. And that whole crew's there for you.
I love it. Love it. Michael, have you accelerated the development? Because like I said, I love Shrimpy's platforms. I know there's a lot of people that absolutely loved it. So we're thrilled to see you continuing to develop and grow. And now you have, you can focus on what you want to do and let Chris deal with all the regulatory compliance nonsense that you were
talking about. Oh, no, that's not my job either. We actually just brought in a new general counsel and chief compliance officer to be announced here in a couple of weeks. Keep an eye out. Really great guy. Got to meet him last month. Michael did too.
Huge, huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many exciting things happening right now. It was interesting because last year I was talking about how the people that are going to make a big difference in crypto in the coming next couple of years are people who have a human element, who have that element of, we're going to hold your hand as you get into crypto, because this is a new industry. This is a new experience. So, you know, when I got introduced to Bitcoin IRA, that was sort of my, like, oh, this is what I've been sort of looking for. And I think there is just that perfect fit. So right now, you know, I am just recently joined. We're working on scaling up the team. We're adding a whole bunch of additional engineers, new product people, new, marketing people, just all across the board who are going to make this an incredible business for anybody who's looking to retire. So, it's very exciting. I do have a Twitter if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter. I don't tweet a lot, but do you include the links or?
Sure. We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. So
we'll hang out with you and watch what you like and repost on Twitter.
But I'm a LinkedIn guy myself. Actually, we were joking about this last night because my Twitter handle is @SenatorKlein and I don't tweet very much. And he goes, why Senator? And I was like, my freshman year of college, I thought I was going to be a U.S. Senator someday. I still got time. I'm only 38. I still got time.
Oh, yeah. You're
I'm young way pop. Underage, actually, to be a senator at this point.
Yeah. As we bring this to a close, just kind of as a quick note, I just saw this come across my screen. BlackRock is preparing to launch a Bitcoin ETF in Brazil this week.
Exciting.
And I think that it really signifies that what we talked a lot about the United States, we talked about U.S. companies and everything else, that Bitcoin does not have a domicile. It is, it's great to see the U.S. embrace it, but let's be clear, there's a lot of countries that are far ahead of us on embracing cryptocurrency.
El Salvador, and Bitcoin. And maybe Argentina next. It's
very, very much so. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see this. It is a global phenomenon. So it's not just the U.S. markets. It truly is going to be interesting. And we'll see. I think we mentioned BRICS a little bit ago. They're trying to figure out whose asset should be kind of that mainstay, behind their asset valuation, and Bitcoin's high on a lot of those countries' lists. So now to see that Brazil is adopting that, I'm excited, guys. That being said, well, thank you guys so much for this. Really excited. Anyone that wants to learn more about Bitcoin IRA, you know where to find them. Take a look. We'll have notes in the show notes. And absolutely take a look at it because, again, there's Bitcoin and then there's the tax savings that you guys can have on it. So really explore every option you have. There is no one way to hold Bitcoin. I have it in, personal wallets. I have it in, Kraken, and I've got it in a couple other random places hidden around that hopefully no one finds, or that at least my wife and kids can find at some point. So there's a lot of ways to do this. I think there's a responsible way to do it. And I think that Chris and Michael are absolutely leading the path on that. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you all next time.
YWhales was founded in 2021 by Jay Steinbeck, a passionate entrepreneur and business owner, with the purpose of bringing YPO and YNG members together in the cryptoverse. YWhales is a collaborative and confidential community centered around cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, an exclusive crypto hub of more than 600 members. To be notified when we release new content, please subscribe to our show in your preferred listening app. For more information, visit www.ywhales.com. YWales is not affiliated with YPO, but at this time only allow for YPO, YPO Gold, and YNG members due to privacy and confidentiality. Support and production for today's episode was done by Truthwork Media. Nothing in the podcast constitutes professional and or financial advice, nor does any information on the podcast constitute a comprehensive or complete statement of the matters discussed or the law relating thereto.